On today's Better Call Sexton, we go to the moon and back. Sabrina Carpenter murdering men. We get a lesson about diversity jurisdiction and contributory negligence. What show could bring all these concepts together other than Better Call Sexton? Which is why you should subscribe and like and hit the notification bell. All those good things. It really does help the channel. Check us out at NYC Divorce Lawyer. Do not miss this episode. We also have something special just for the boys. So stick around. You don't want to miss this one. Let's get after it.
All right, we got the new Zendaya movie, The Drama. Have you seen this movie?
I have not seen the movie.
So it was very, even the promotion of it was kind of very secretive, mysterious, and it was all about the drama of this couple leading up to their wedding day. And now the cat's kind of out of the bag on the internet. Zendaya, her character, confesses that she once plotted a school shooting. Did not carry it out, but thought about it. And that throws a wrench into everything. And it got me thinking about, do you have to expose your deepest, darkest secrets before you get married? Obviously, if they're going to come out, maybe it's better to get ahead of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is like the protocol on that in terms of, you know, what do you need to disclose? What's allowed to stay a secret and what's best for the health of your marriage?
You know, I'm mixed on this because I think I've said before and I stand by that to feel truly loved by someone, you want them to see the ugly parts of you as well as the performative self, right? So there's a performative self that we all put onto the world or to the internet or to whoever. And then there's like the core of who we are, right? We know that underneath that facade, there are some parts of all of us that are selfish and ugly and petty and all that kind of stuff. And we probably all have some dark thoughts and some dirty thoughts and some thoughts that we're not proud of and we wouldn't want to say out loud in polite company. But it's nice to know that a person would know you have those sides and those thoughts and still loves you anyway. I mean, I genuinely believe that I've said before that I don't really believe in the concept of the devil, but if there was a devil, that the devil's primary function would be to convince us that we're so bestial and awful that God couldn't possibly love us. And I think we all tell ourselves, oh, if people knew how I am inside, they wouldn't love me fully. So I think there's value in sharing some of your darker thoughts, some of your sadder thoughts, some of your more, you know, awful tendencies and feelings with your partner. Because very often, I think they'll give us grace that we wouldn't give ourselves. You know, like we'll look at ourselves and go like, why are you so stupid? Why are you so weak? Whereas if our partner did something out of stupidity or weakness, we'd be like, hey, it's okay. You're human. You know, like it's okay to get things wrong sometimes. So I think we give other people more grace than we give ourselves if we're a well-adjusted human being. Should you tell your partner every crazy thing you've ever thought? Probably not. Probably not. You know, probably not with the proliferation of like ultra violence and porn.
Mm-hmm.
You might not want to say like, you know what I had a thought of once? Like if you're a cousin and you're like, wow, don't, why would you say that out loud? Like, so I think there's some things that probably just keep that to yourself. Just maybe not share that with your partner, maybe share it with a therapist. That's one of the things, again, I know I tend to get on a soapbox about encouraging people to be in therapy, but I think one of the best things about being in therapy is having someone who has no tie to anyone in your life whatsoever and no connection to your real life and has confidentiality, that you can like share with that person the craziest shit you think, the most perverse stuff you think. You can say that out loud. Right now, everyone is like trying to figure out who my therapist is and be like, let me get in touch with
that person. They better have a vault, man.
Kate is amazing. Yeah, you know her first name. Kate is
amazing.
Or
did he do that on purpose, Matt? Great. Maybe it's actually a guy named George.
A guy named George. How did you know about George? No. I told Kate about George. Oh, wait. No, sorry. Jesus. Yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of value in having a person who has no connection to your life at all. Because look, there are some things that if you share them with your partner, they can't unhear them.
Yeah.
And it may create in them some misperception, or it may create in them, it may make something bigger than it needs to be. So I do think there is some value in keeping some things to yourself to the degree that you share it only with someone like a therapist who has no tie to your life other than, and no purpose in your life other than to help you navigate yourself and become the best version possible of yourself.
Okay, Jim, Blake Lively's case against Justin Baldoni took a big hit this past week. A judge threw out 10 of the 13 claims that she made against him,
oof,
including the big boys, the harassment, sexual harassment, and defamation. Yep. The retaliation that went online, that is still going forward. So there is still something on the table for Blake, but a pretty big blow, I would imagine, if 10 of your 13 claims are thrown out.
Well, it depends on which ones. But yeah, the biggest big ones were the ones that got thrown out in this situation. I mean, if there are times where people have, you know, 13 criminal charges pending against them and, you know, only three of them stick, but it's like the big three felonies. So
right,
this is one of those situations where like the major claims got tossed. And so that leaves the ones that remain sort of negligible in their value.
Now, Blake Lively's team, I believe, is trying to characterize this as more of a technicality. They were saying that she
always do that when you lose.
Right. Well, that's what's going on here, right? Yeah. Because it was.
Anytime I talk about how the judge's decision was, although technically correct, certainly doesn't serve the interests of justice, and ultimately the appeals process will have to bear this out, that's a way of losing and then, you know, trying to save some face.
Yeah. This one was that she was an independent contractor, not an employee. So it can't be harassment.
Correct.
And that the movie was shot in New Jersey, mm-hmm, so some of the harassment laws in California don't apply.
Right.
But if you dig deeper, there was, the judge did say, like, there really is no grounds for this. So that's kind of the PR machine at work.
Yeah, I mean, what happens is when, first of all, where actions are brought, if you bring an action and your action gets dismissed for those kinds of procedural grounds, you made a tactical decision to bring it in this jurisdiction. Mm. So you can't claim you were a passenger on that. Like, you brought the claim. So if you brought the claim and you go, oh, well, that's because it was brought in this state, it's like saying, well, I put it on a high shelf and now I can't reach it because it's on a high shelf. So procedurally, that, now again, there may be tactical reasons why you bring a thing in a particular manner or under a particular statute or in a particular jurisdiction or venue. But ultimately, strategically, that was a gambit. I mean, there is, in the law, there is an element of strategy and there is an element of risk. Like, everything you choose to do, there's some element of risk as to how you do it. So I think that they made some tactical choices here. In retrospect, it's easy to look at it and say, okay, that was the wrong choice. What I will tell you is, in my experience, judges, their prejudgment of the case and their decision in the case very often match each other. Mm. Like, they find grounds to back up legally what it is they want to do. But I've had judges make a decision that I go, oh yeah, what they wanted to do was they liked this person, they didn't like this person, they believe that the actual interests of justice require this person to win, and then they find a way to legally back themselves into that in a way that's ideally appeal proof. And sometimes the best way to do that is a procedural mechanism. It's to look at it and say, okay, I'm dismissing it for the following procedural reasons rather than the substantive merits of the case. And then the question becomes is, do you also include, as this one did, some colloquy, which is essentially what you call it when the part of a decision where a judge is not issuing an order, but is talking about their reasoning, is the colloquy. And basically, like, it's not binding precedent, but it's instructive as to how the judge came to their decision. And so what you find sometimes in the colloquy is some discussion about, well, and also if it had been done this way, then I probably would have done this anyway, which is kind of like, you know, if my grandma had balls, she'd be my grandpa. Yeah. Okay, right. We knew that, but she's not. So I think that there was some, in this decision, there was some of that.
There was some attempt to get them to mediate,
yep,
and they both said, no way.
Yeah. This happens all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
all the time.
When you see, like, I look at Blake Lively here as being just like, she's digging her heels in and she's going to take this thing, Costanza, to the Hamptons, like, all the way.
All the way.
There's no stopping her.
Yeah.
And when you're in that situation as a lawyer, you just got to ride with it, even if it's stupid.
I mean, you do. I've had this conversation many times with clients where I say to them, hey, look, this is the settlement that's on the table. I think you should take it. I think that the risk versus reward, the cost of litigating, the risk involved. And I've had people that make that bet and it pays off big. And I've had people make that bet and man, do they live to regret it.
Mm.
And what always shocks me is when they roll the dice, they lose, and then they go, okay, tell them I'll take their deal. And it's like, that deal's gone now. Like, I had this happen recently where an adversary who I've had a lot of cases against was very full of bluster. And I made what I considered to be an extremely fair offer. And my client just wanted it to be over with, even though we were pretty confident in our legal position. And opposing counsel and her client both went, nope, we're going all the way. And we went into chambers, just the attorneys. And the judge said, look, what's really going on? Where are we at in this? And you're not allowed to discuss settlement negotiations in front of a judge. That's a little known fact, is you're not allowed to go in and say, well, they just offered us $5 million. Right? You're not allowed to do that because it would have a chilling effect on settlement discussions. And the system wants people to be encouraged to have open settlement discussions. So you can't go in and say, well, judge, he says he didn't do it, but he offered us $5 million. You know, so you can't do that in court. Some lawyers still try to do it, and it's absolutely shocking when they do it, but you're not supposed to do that. In this case, I said outside, look, we'll agree to X, Y, and Z. Take it. It's as good as it's going to get. You're going to lose in there. Nope, nope, nope. We go into chambers. Judge says, where are we at? We said, we're nowhere, judge. We can't reach a settlement. Judge said, all right, listen, I'll tell you right now, if I find X, Y, and Z, then here's what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm going to do with this issue. And it was exactly what my client wanted. And we walk out and opposing counsel looks at me and goes, all right, we'll take the deal. And I was like, fuck, no, you will not. That deal's gone. That ship has sailed. The judge just told me explicitly that we're going to win this case. So the answer is no, we're not agreeing to that anymore. And she was like, well, a minute ago, that was the offer. I'm like, a minute before we walked into the judge. And I told you, this is not going to go your way. Now, we still ended up settling the case, but much more favorably. If that person 5 minutes before we went in with the judge had taken the deal, they would have saved themselves a couple of million bucks. So it really is a lesson in, you know, what really went on behind closed doors. You don't know what conversations lawyers have with their clients. I mean, I've gone in vociferously advocating for a position that 5 minutes before I was in a conference room with my client going, are you insane? Take this deal. And I've had that happen. And I don't know if I've told this story before. I think I told it in an interview once, but I had a case not recently, it was quite some time ago now, where I had a client who, you know, it was a very contentious, ugly, high net worth divorce. And we had a settlement on the table that I thought was excellent for my client. But my client was a religious fundamentalist Christian. And we went into court and we were ready to finalize this deal. We struck a deal. It was a deal that was very favorable to my client, who was going to get crushed if we went to trial. And we agreed to this deal. We were going in to do what's called a voir dire, which is basically we put the settlement on the record and then the case is over with. And my client got to court and he said, Jim, I just want you to know I'm not going to take the deal. And I said, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Like, this is a great deal. The risk is unbelievable if we go to trial. What are you doing? And he said, I talked to God.
Oh, Jesus.
I prayed on it. And the Lord spoke to me. And the Lord told me that I should take it to trial. And I said, I think that's a very bad idea. All the reasons I discussed with you, I think this is very high risk. I think he said, no, the Lord spoke to my heart and the Lord told me that I shouldn't do this. And sure enough, we went in, we tried the case. He got demolished. I mean, he got demolished. And I went back to the office and my longtime partner, Colin, was there. And I said to Colin, I told him what had happened. And he said, you played that all wrong, Jim. And he said, what you should have done is you should have said, wait, when did you talk to the Lord? And if he said 10 o'clock, say, okay,
God
at 10:15, God contacted me.
Yeah.
And God said, Jim, my son, in whom I am well pleased, your blessings I bestow upon thee. By the way, if you talk to Steve, tell him forget what I said 15 minutes ago. He should definitely take the deal. He's like, what he said is unfalsifiable. What you said is also unfalsifiable. You should have done it the right way. And I learned a lesson from that. So I think if it ever happens to me again, that someone believes that an omnipotent creator deity has told them not to take a deal that's favorable to them, I'm going to know exactly how to play it. Hopefully they don't watch Better Call Sexton. Look, guys, we spend a lot of time on this show talking about men and women and what it is we find appealing about each other. One of the things I've talked about over and over again is how one of the most appealing things a man can do is have his together. And that's where Rocket Money comes in. Sponsor of our show, really proud to be associated with Rocket Money. Rocket Money helps you focus your finances and get your collective financial house in order. They can give you alerts when there's changes to your recurring subscriptions. They can help you with budgeting. They help you with automatic savings plans. There are so many features that Rocket Money brings to help you do a spring cleaning of your finances. And there is nothing more attractive than a man who knows how to keep his act together, keep his financial house in order. So now it's time to get your spring cleaning, get your financial house in order. Go to rocketmoney.com/James Sexton. That's rocketmoney.com/James Sexton. Or check out the QR code here on the screen for special offers available only to Better Call Sexton fans. And this will be available to you. Do not miss the opportunity. rocketmoney.com/James Sexton.
Jim, do you have moon fever? I got big time Artemis 2 moon fever right now.
I don't.
I thought that. I was like, this guy's not going to give a fuck about the moon.
I don't give the slightest.
Really?
I could not give less of a fuck.
There is nothing about you that's like wondering why and what and what's out there and who created or if it was created or science and religion and all that.
Okay, wait a minute. You just turned the hubris of our desire to launch into space and me being like, yeah, the fact that we've like created the engineering ability to go into this environment and like, you know, into me not caring that there's like an omnipotent creator deity in the nature of infinity. Like, that's a fucking bit of a stretch, man. Like,
so you think that the money and effort and the focus to just go there is the problem?
Literally thousands of children die from starvation
per hour. It's a tough sell, yeah.
And we are spending millions of dollars for the purpose of being able to go, look at how pretty it looks from here. Like,
it is pretty. It is definitively pretty, Jim.
It is very pretty. You are absolutely correct. Is it worth thousands of dying children from starvation?
Okay, but okay.
I mean, look,
would that money be spent? If you could guarantee me that all the money from NASA would be spent in the right way, I'd be with you.
If only we lived in a democracy where the popular vote could somehow determine where our funds go to.
Look around, Sexton.
If only such a Shangri-La existed.
That shit's out the window, man.
Oh, my God. I mean, look, I think there's just a hubris to this whole space thing. I think it's very like, you know, like we've got a planet. Allegedly there's intelligent life on it, you know, like we haven't figured this fucking place out yet, and we gotta find
Not
new ones
close.
Now
yeah,
we gotta find new ones to get to, and now we gotta like get up there, and we're gonna like get up there, and we're gonna name different rocks that we sell. Like, come on, guys, like, really, this is worth this level of effort? Like, the people that are working on this are like the most brilliant people in the world, and this is what we're doing with them. This is where we're taking the most brilliant people in the world, and we're sending them up there so that they could take some pictures and we could have them on like the morning talk shows where they're like, and in our next story, did you know squirrels can water ski? Like, it's like, it's actually equally relevant to most people's day-to-day fucking lives.
Okay, but the romantic in you, were you touched?
The romantic in me is on Earth.
Okay.
It's on Earth with a bunch of other people.
Understood.
Many of whom are very worthy of love and lonely. Like, what is romantic about
this? Okay, but no, here, let me explain. So, Commander Reed Wiseman, he is the commander of the ship.
Yes, we know.
His wife passed away of cancer.
Yes.
And he even offered, he said, I'll quit being an astronaut to help you through your battle. She said, no way, this is your dream.
No,
anyway, the crew surprises him and decides to name one of these new craters they found on this trip after her, Carol. It's waterworks and hugs and tears. Nothing? Nothing? Nothing, Jim? It's literally I love you to the moon and back. The personification of it.
I am not going to try.
Yeah, you've never done
Listen,
that.
Listen, if, first of all, the fact that this was touching to this man, I would never take it away from him.
You just
And the fact that he lost a family member to cancer, having lost someone I love to cancer, I absolutely get it. So I would never piss on that. However, it's a crater. You named a rock formation on another planet And naming, by the way, is arbitrary to begin with. Like, naming is just, I've decided to name it that. What if there's another race of aliens that already named it something else? What if they named it under, like, Bleep Blorp, after his spouse died of cancer? Or they might not even be gendered, by the way, aliens. I don't know why I gendered them. They might not have external genitalia. I don't know.
I feel like I own a piece of the moon really from, my eighth grade birthday. You know, like, you own part of the moon now.
Wow. And hasn't it been life-changing for you that you own a piece of it? It's like when people are like, oh, I bought you a star. What you're telling me is I am not very interesting. Because that is the most generic gift you could ever purchase somebody in the history of the universe. I named a star after you. There are billions of stars in an almost infinite number of galaxies. And I named a random one after you. Some people find astronomy to be the most fascinating of things. I have to tell you, other than talking to a fan of Radiohead about Radiohead, there is almost nothing I would rather want to do less than listen to someone try to talk to me about astronomy.
All right, moving on.
I find it wildly uninteresting. This is a side of you I would not have pictured this.
I love space. I love it.
Really?
Yep. I agree with everything you said about money better spent and it's silly, but there's a part of me that's just like, holy shit.
You find the majesty of space.
I find the brains that it takes to do this just blows
my
mind.
That I get.
That to me is fascinating.
That I'm all for. Yeah. I just, I feel like about this the way I feel. Like I represent some brilliant people who work in finance. And many of them are like PhD level computer scientists from MIT and Harvard and Stanford. And they're working on like quant technology related to trading. Mm-hmm. And I find myself thinking, like, these people should be working on cancer research.
Yeah, you should save the world.
And instead, they're working on making, like, billionaires into more billionaires. Mm-hmm. Like, and I just find myself kind of going, like, I'm not saying this isn't amazing and an incredible feat of engineering. Like, but this is what, like, this is the thread we want to pull. Like, we want to worry about, like Musk talking constantly about wanting to colonize Mars. Like, you kind of go, like, couldn't we just work on not fucking this planet up any worse than we already have? And what we could do to maybe make the conditions here a little bit better? That just feels to me like a more worthy pursuit. But again, I don't like to yuck anybody's yum.
Well, so you're also talking to a guy who, I think, like, I cry over sports, and I think that you should get paid millions of dollars to bounce a ball around. So maybe my priority is a little bit wacky.
Though I get that there's like a human drama to it, and there's the agony of defeat, and
there's drama in the moon.
If somebody's like, if the thing blows up or something, that'd be like Apollo 13, oh my god, I was crying when Ben Affleck and the thing about elevator. You take care of my baby girl now, like she's your. Dude, we all cried at that thing. Come on. I cried at the end of Braveheart. I cried all these things. I don't care about Scotland. Sorry, guys. But I mean, I get it. Yeah. But I just don't find that interesting. I don't know. It's just not that interesting to me.
Well, what do you find? Do you find it interesting that Sabrina Carpenter just keeps killing men in her music videos?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So then let's move on, Mr. Fancy Pants.
I have to tell you, I watched the video for House Tour. I admit I'm a Sabrina Carpenter fan. And I have to tell you, that's a feminism I could really get behind.
Well,
pun intended.
Yeah. You sent this over to me. This was a post on Instagram saying that Sabrina Carpenter killing men in her music videos is a, quote, hilarious tradition.
I just thought the term is a hilarious tradition. That if you gender swapped this, holy Christ, to the outcry.
If blood was pouring from a woman's face or something.
And somebody said, well, what about Eminem's videos? Eminem got pilloried killing his ex-wife in those videos.
Yeah.
Like, this is just her just randomly killing men wantonly, And the most, I don't know, I feel like guys, like, we pulled together and we got this done. Like, this is, if you watch the House Tour video, like, it is borderline porn and it's purely for men. And for to be like, no, this is a pro-feminist video, I was like, okay. I mean, if this is feminism, then men would be very into this form of feminism.
So we're just going to let them have this feminist win and just enjoy
100%. It. 100%. Yeah, okay. I think that this is, guys, get together here. Just huddle up. Boys, all the boys, ladies,
kid in
just
here.
For a second, go just in the other room where earmuffs, we can do that. Guys, watch the house tour video.
Trust this man. Trust him.
If this is modern feminism, I want all of you to get a Bella Abzug t-shirt tomorrow. I'm going back to Gloria Steinem's this week if possible. And I think we got to all pull together and get this thing done because this is, it is going in the right direction. All right, ladies, come back. Get everybody else back in the room. Earmuffs is off. Earmuffs is off. And that, gentlemen, is why you're doing it wrong and that women shouldn't carry the emotional load. Sorry, ladies, I didn't want to do that with you here. I wanted the men just to talk to the men about this. You know what? If after this Better Call Sexton, we don't hit 100,000 subscribers, I'm hanging up my tie. Okay? I'm hanging up my tie. I'm over. It's out. It's out. I don't want the house tour. It's over at that point. So remember to like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. Don't make me have an OnlyFans. If I have to do it, I'm going to do it. Okay?
Don't, we don't tempt hit 100,000. Don't tempt them. They'll do it on purpose.
Some little
now.
Provocative with the tie, maybe. Huh? A little something for you out there. Hilarious. That's what it would be. Just like Sabrina Carpenter killing men. Okay. Remember to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. Check us out at NYC Divorce Lawyer. Go to sexandshow.com. But for now, we're adjourned.